Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Affney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. This is a special edition of Securing America. I always think it's a special edition whenever Trevor Loudon is in the house, but this is a special, special edition because we're going to have an extended conversation with him, I'm pleased to say. Trevor is, of course, one of the great authorities on the problem of enemies within. He hails originally from New Zealand, which makes him a binational treasure, not just ours, I think. He has been incredibly influential and helpful with his myriad articles and a number of very important books, and in fact, a couple of movies that have really documented, as he does tirelessly, what we are up against in terms of those inside the United States. Some have come from elsewhere, some have been grown here, I fear. But they share in common a desire to, as Barack Obama put it, fundamentally transform the United States, which is code for destroying it. Trevor Loudon's most recent book is a six-part volume of six-part set, I should say, of what he calls House Un-Americans. The third part has just been published, involving several of our major states, Florida, Illinois, and there's one other that I can't remember. Well,
Georgia.
Florida, Georgia, and Illinois.
And Delaware.
And Delaware. Trevor Loudon is calling it in from the sidelines. Trevor, we're delighted to have you with us. Thank you for this body of work, The Enemies Within, being one of the titles of both a book and a movie, Enemies Within the Church, your more recent movie. You are prodigiously productive, and I can't tell you how much we've benefited both personally and corporately and here at Secure Freedom, Securing America, from all your good work.
Well, thanks so much, Frank. And it's a pleasure. I think without you and your colleagues, we probably wouldn't be able to fight the battle we are now. We might have lost this a long time ago.
Well, you know, if you don't mind my just doing a short plug, I am extremely proud of the work we do at the Center for Security Policy. Trevor, you have been a great contributor to many of its projects, including notably our marvelous Committee on the Present Danger, China. You've contributed to the accountabilityinitiative.org. We turn to you for all manner of research and analysis. And I just want to say, if people are interested in finding out more about all of that good work, I hope they will go to centerforsecuritypolicy.org and help us make it possible. This is a prodigiously impressive team we've put together with people like Trevor and senior fellows and staff of the center and so on, our partners in various coalitions and working groups and the like. You need to know what we know, and you need to help us, I believe, continue to make that kind of information available to our countrymen and women. It may make all the difference.
Certainly.
So, Trevor, speaking of all the difference, I'm interested in visiting with you first and foremost about what is going on at Columbia University, but now it seems increasingly in a number of college campuses across the country, some of them Ivy League, some of them private, some of them public. This is a thing now, I think it's fair to say. How would you describe what's going on and who's behind it?
Well, back in 2011, we saw the Occupy movement, which was sort of the Marxist class struggle thing to raise awareness, and it got a lot of traction around the world. Then we saw Black Lives Matter in 2020, rioting all over the country, and that was basically a Chinese operation. So what we're seeing now is the pro-Chinese communists are working together with Islamist groups, the Red-Green Alliance, which you often talk about, Frank, as Carlos the Jackal said, the famous terrorist, he said that an alliance of Marxists and Islamists was what is needed to destroy America. So he said that back in the early 80s, I believe. And so what we're seeing, this has been building for years with through groups like Students for Justice in Palestine, which was founded by two Muslim communists back in 2000. They've been building up on the campuses. They've been getting help from new refugees coming into the country, and they're taking their cues directly from the Iranians. You know, there was a memo put out a little while ago from the Iranian Revolutionary Guard talking about the 15th of this month as a starting point for occupations, for demonstrations, all, and they're going to explicitly said, we'll use the Palestinian cause to put the heat on America, to really put the pressure on America and other Western countries. So
can you say who is saying that they'll use the Palestinian cause?
The Iranian Revolutionary Guard.
Okay.
Designated terrorist organization, you know, so they are giving cues to these people. These people don't need to get an email every morning telling them what to do. They know that the Palestinian issue is the big one. They know they have an alliance of communists and Islamists on our campuses and in our big cities, and they are just going to town. You know, this is Council on American Islamic Relations. This is Communist Party USA, Party for Socialism and Liberation, Freedom Road Socialist Organization, Muslim Brotherhood front groups, all of it working together to create chaos in America in election year. And I expect this to accelerate through the summer, and I expect to see some kinetic incidents as well. I expect to see terrorist attacks of some form through the summer. I hope I'm wrong on that. I really do. But I'd be very surprised if we don't.
Yeah, I fear you're right, Trevor. Let me just ask you, before we have to take a short break, to calibrate on something for me, Trevor, because it's something that I imagine others in our audience who are not steeped in this as you are might be puzzling about as well. You're saying that two Marxist communists started this group, Students for Justice in Palestine, a rapidly pro-Hamas, pro-jihadist, Sharia supremacist outfit. Communists, the last time I checked, were atheists. How is it that you could have people who are both Marxists or communists were steeped in a religious practice like Islam?
Well, Hatem Bazian, when he started Students for Justice in Palestine, was a member of the Committees of Correspondence for the Democracy and Socialism, a spin-off from the Communist Party USA. The other guy that started with him was a member of the International Socialist Organization, a Trotskyist group. Look, we did our movie Enemies Within the Church, showing that the Marxists were getting inside the Christian churches to use Christianity for the revolutionary, you know, for the revolutionary movement. Well, I've been doing the same with Islam for decades. They started this after the Bolshevik Revolution by infiltrating the mosques and madrasas in Central Asia, with turning them to Soviet madrasas, Soviet mosques. Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine was created by the communists. The PLO, Palestine Liberation Army organization, was created by the communists. The communists were even inside the Nation of Islam in this country. They were editing the Nation of Islam's journals for many years. So, and you look at someone like Nihad Awad, the founder of CARE, you know, very much involved, very much a Hamas supporter. But he started out as a supporter of the Soviet Front World Federation of Democratic Youth. Many of the leaders, like Linda Sarsour, are also members of Democratic Socialists of America. They are happy to work with the communists. And maybe one day they will fight each other over our corpses. But right now they're allies. They are happy to work together to destroy the great Satan.
I'm pretty sure it comes to that. We'll be right back with more with Trevor Loudon. Stay tuned.
Sure.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. In July 2020, candidate Joe Biden promised Sharia supremacists that in exchange for their votes, he would appoint Muslims to staff his administration. Moderate Muslim Zudi Jasser warned shortly after the start of the Biden presidency that it was, quote, a Trojan horse that concealed the extent to which the red-green alliance of the far-left progressives and Islamists are being given the reins, unquote. The result has been nothing short of disastrous for our country, its Mideast allies, especially Israel, and vital interests abroad and increasingly at home. Look no further than Columbia University. The Biden Islamist latest success is a new State Department report on human rights practices. It treats Israel as a worse human rights abuser than China, Russia, Iran, and the Taliban. This monstrous lie is yet another gift to jihadists who seek not only death to Israel, but death to America. This is Frank Affney.
Welcome back. We are visiting with Trevor Loudon, one of our great resources on, well, many things, but in particular, the enemies within. He has written, in addition to House Un-Americans, a two-volume set about security risk senators. He's written a tremendously impressive tome entitled Enemies Within. All of this is incredibly fastidiously documented. So when he tells you about people's associations, connections, involvements, beliefs, practices, what have you, I found you can take it to the bank, and we do right here at Securing America. Trevor, again, thank you for being with us today. I wanted to continue this conversation about what we're seeing playing out on college campuses and, as you say, in city streets. The volume seems to be intensifying, as does the rhetoric that seems increasingly inflammatory. What we're talking about now, among other things, is not only pro-Hamas chants, but genocidal chants condemning Israel and the Jews, driving them from the river to the sea, and so on. But in addition to death to Israel, Trevor, we're now starting to hear the refrain, death to America. Now, what's that about? That's most notoriously associated with the Iranian government of the mullahs. But is this an Iranian play specifically, or is this a common denominator between the left and the jihadis?
Well, I think it takes its cues from Iran. Absolutely, the talking points are coming from Iran, but this sentiment is there. You know, you've got with increased Islamic immigration over the last many years, we've imported a very radical element into this country that does not want to integrate, that wants to basically take over America. This is not every Muslim, but this is a substantial minority feel this way, especially the young second generation ones. They identify much more with Palestine or Tunisia or where their ancestors came from than they do from America. And they are partnered up with this new generation of radical leftist, American born kids, Hispanic, Asian, European, whatever. People don't quite understand the depth of the Marxist radicalization that's happened in the universities over the last 20 years. Well, we're seeing the fruits of it now.
Tell us a little bit about the background, how far back it goes, Trevor, and whence it came.
Well, what we're seeing now is the universities are run by 60s radicals. These were the people who supported the Viet Cong during the war. The Vietnam War, when American troops were fighting the Viet Cong. They love Fidel Castro. They love the Sandinistas. They're now administering these universities. They are senior lecturers. They're professors. They're indoctrinating these kids. They've had 40 years to teach kids that America is a hateful country, that it got rich off slavery, that it's exploited the third world, and is the cause of most of the problems of the world. So, you've got this toxic brew of these radical Islamist kids with these radical communist kids who are allied in the idea that America is the problem. Israel is the small problem. America is the big problem. To have a world Islamic state or a world communist state, you have to get rid of America. You have to do that. So death to America is a perfectly logical statement from their point of view.
Yeah, and it suits both of them.
Reserving
what the final outcome is. As you say, they'll be fighting over our corpses, but for the moment, they are joined in this common purpose of...
Just like Japan.
And would you say, Trevor, is there any question that they mean that literally?
Look,
to Americans, you know, as well as to our country?
Look, 100%. You know, look, back in the 70s, the Weather Underground had plans to take over the country, and they were going to eliminate 25 million people that couldn't be re-educated. That was their estimation of those who would have to be killed. So it's only got more intense since that period. So these people, you look at the Antifa people marching the streets, you see that their eyes are just dead, just full of hatred. And you see this in the Black Lives Matter radicals as well. They've been taught that America is the cause of all their problems, and the only way to get a fair and just progressive world is to eliminate the evil America, the apartheid, the Nazi America.
Now, you talked a little bit about the extent to which this indoctrination goes back to, I think, the 1930s with the Frankfurt School, which was imported from Germany, communists from there. Talk a little bit more, Trevor, about the role of the Chinese Communist Party in all of this in more contemporary times.
Well, you know, this really, the Chinese Communist Party started to make a big impact in the early 60s through the Progressive Labour Party. They really had a lot of influence in SDS, the Weathermen. They started to get a lot of influence in groups like the Workers' World Party and others. So, and then mostly through Freedom Road Socialist Organization. Like back in Jesse Jackson's time, when he ran for president, his Rainbow Coalition was run by the pro-Chinese League of Revolutionary Struggle, the pro-Chinese Communist Workers' Party, the pro-Chinese Freedom Road Socialist Organization, and the pro-Chinese Line of March. Now, all those 60s and 70s pro-Chinese groups have now heavily infiltrated the Democratic Party, heavily infiltrated the unions, and heavily infiltrated groups like Black Lives Matter, and are basically running many campuses around the country. So what we are seeing is, you know, Black Lives Matter, for instance, you know, they work very closely with the Chinese consulate in San Francisco. I have tapes of their leaders talking about how that we have to get rid of Trump to protect China, that we run our messaging past the Chinese consulate before we do anything. You know, so there's a very clear tie-up between the Black Lives Matter rioting and the Chinese Communist Party, and there's a very clear tie-up now between the CCP and what we are seeing on the streets now. Both the Islamic side and the communist side have extensive links to the CCP, but also the Cubans, also the Venezuelans, also the Iranians. This is, Reagan talked about the evil empire, you know, that China, Russia, the Soviet Union, Iran. Well, now it's China, Russia, the Soviet Union, Nicaragua, Venezuela, Cuba, North Korea, and several other countries in there as well.
The Soviet Union would not be in the mix other than, you know, sort of as a reorganized, mostly Russian Federation, I guess.
But, the Russian Federation is definitely involved in this mix. There's no question about that.
As, among other things, the junior partner of the CCP. And Trevor, you know, our working theory in our Committee on the Present Danger of China, which you're a very important member of, is that the capo tutti capo is the Chinese Communist Party and Xi Jinping, and everybody else is kind of a vassal to them. Yeah. And that's translating into the population here too, I take it. And talk, if you would, as well, quickly, Trevor, about the insertion of larger and larger numbers of Chinese nationals into this country, especially unaccompanied military age men.
Look, the Communist Party of America, the CPUSA, said 10 years ago that if war broke out with America, they would be fighting on our soil for China. So there's this domestic element that is primed and ready to go. Plus, there's nearly a million Chinese nationals in the San Gabriel Valley alone. And you do not get out of China without the blessing of the CCP. You do not take your family.
And not only that, hold the thought here for a moment, Trevor. We have to take a short break. You are also, while here, very much under the control of the CCP. They're overseas, police service centers and the like. We'll talk more about all of this on the other side of a break. But stay tuned with us for more of the great Trevor Loudon right after this.
Night after night in cities across the country, black garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
We're back. Trevor Loudon is in the house. Once again, I'm just ecstatic to have a chance to visit with him. We have a third block that is our long one, and we're going to get into some detail with Trevor about how he forecasts what is now certainly in the offing and where it is likely to lead this country. I do want to say, Trevor, one of the things I've always admired about you is that you came to America from your native New Zealand, having seen communists take down your government. And you came here to warn us that it could happen here. And by God, it seems as though it is in the process right now. The communists on the one hand, but as you've said repeatedly, the red-green axis, the Sharia supremacists are also very much in place. And I did want to just say, before we pivot back to the rioting or the incipient rioting, the demonstrations, or whatever you want to call them, the takeovers, the occupations, you mentioned at some length, Trevor, the infrastructure that the communists have built up inside this country and various front organizations and tie-ins with the Democratic Party and labor and education and so on. Briefly discuss, if you would, the Sharia supremacist infrastructure, notably that of the Muslim Brotherhood, but also the Iranians as well.
Well, the Iranians work through a group called NIAC, for instance, which is the National Iranian Action Committee, which is funded, I think, over a dozen U.S. senators to push them. That's why we have an Iran nuclear deal, because of this pressure. And they're working, infiltrating governments and county commissions all over the country. They have several organizations involved in doing this. There was a scandal recently where Iranians were working in the State Department as spies for Iran. This was exposed, and these people are still there.
And in the Defense Department as well.
In the Defense Department. Yeah. They haven't been removed. Yeah. Can you believe that?
Well, so the Muslim based on what you've taught me, I can believe it. It's all too common. And in fact, it's tying in this infrastructure point. You've noted that one of the things that Joe Biden promised to another Brotherhood front called M-Gage on the eve of his election, if you will, so-called election, that he would populate his administration with Muslims of their ilk, let's be clear.
Yeah.
Not the non-Sharia supremacists, not the ones who hate America, but the Brotherhood and their friends. That was in exchange for, you know, support for him in the election cycle. But when you look at the mosque complexes, when you look at the Islamic centers, when you look at these myriad front groups, in this little book entitled The Explanatory Memorandum, which is the secret plan of the Muslim Brotherhood for destroying Western civilization from within by our hands and the hands of the believers so that Allah's religion was made victorious over all other religions. That's a verbatim quote out of their strategic plan. And in the back, they've got, 30 or so groups. It's many, many more at this time.
Which are all operating on college campuses now, you know. And look, I had a friend in New Zealand who had converted to Islam and actually was trained in Iran to go into Iraq to fight the Americans. But then he was sent back to New Zealand to become a sleeper in New Zealand. But he was recruited by security intelligence services. So he flipped, but they sent him back into the mosque as a spy. And he said, this was a moderate mosque in Auckland. And he said he trained the boys in martial arts. He said the young Muslim boys, they loved New Zealand. They loved the rugby. They loved the beaches. They loved the sport. They loved the culture. And all of them wanted to commit jihad during their lifetime.
Wow.
You know, that was their ambition. Yeah. This was a moderate mosque. Well,
this is another example of indoctrination. And in this case, it's baked into the Sharia from Allah. Is it not? From Allah.
This is a command from Allah to occupy. They come to America to occupy America, ultimately. So that's what they're trying to do.
And as you said, Trevor, they've come here in immense numbers. And in addition to those that were allowed in illegally, the Biden administration actually imported somewhere between 70 and 100,000 of these, mostly men, not all of them, but mostly young men who seem to be fairly Sharia compliant, I have to say.
Yeah.
And when you put all that together and then you add on top of it the Chinese or their various proxies, you have the potential, do you not, for a fifth column inside this country of unprecedented
proportions? We could have 500,000 subversives in this country, and we wouldn't know. 500,000 people ready to blow up reservoirs or attack police stations or attack power relay stations or assassinate public figures. But we know that many of the illegals coming across the border now are military age Chinese nationals. Well, they're not coming here to go to Vegas. You know, they got out of China with the connivance of their government. They knew they're here. So you got this.
Well,
perfect,
you say connivance.
Storm.
I mean, don't you mean really, if they're People's Liberation Army
orders
people, they've been ordered here for missions.
Yeah, these are military folk who have been basically told, you come across the border, you find out, you get to that arms cache, and you wait for the day. You do a scoping out. You look around the local infrastructure. You scout out the local territory to make sure we haven't missed anything, but you are ready for action. You know, the Hezbollah has been doing this for 30 years, but this is the Chinese and also to a degree the Russians are doing this now in big numbers. And you look at this as election year. If Trump wins, the Chinese will not be happy about that. If Biden wins, the Chinese will be a lot happier about it. And I can guarantee you, just like the violence was used to hurt Trump in 2020, Look, we'll get violence through the summer, I'm sure, but I guarantee you if Trump is elected in November, in that lame duck period between November and when he takes office, can you imagine how crazy the left and the radicals are going to go during that period? And who's going to stop them? Do you think Joe Biden's going to stop them?
Well, not likely. But just play this out, Trevor. We've got a period here before the election takes place where the kind of pressure that they could bring to bear could create problems for Biden, whether it's at the Chicago convention, for example, or afterwards, or maybe even before. Another consideration that I'm very much concerned about is that if they do go violent in our country, light the place up, engage in the kinds of violent acts, especially that you just described, or you know, just Summer of Love 2.0, which was bad enough, this could greatly facilitate the Chinese Communist Party's ambitions to seize places like Taiwan and maybe the Philippines and other places.
Well, if we have a biological attack on America, or somebody sets off a mini dirty nuke in some city, you know, we're not going to be interested in fighting a foreign war. And at the same time, the Chinese controlled unions in this country are getting ready for big strikes. So I think they're going to try and shut down Long Beach over the summer and the warehouses of the Inland Empire, which will mean shortages, empty shelves all across America very, very quickly. So this is
How would that benefit their preferred candidate, Joe Biden, do you think?
Well, what I think, there's several ways it could happen. A, it could be so serious that there isn't an election. You know, that we're in a war footing and, you can't have an election while there's a war going on, or, you know, something that happens in the run-up. But even it also when they attack the Democratic Party headquarters, which they're going to do, the convention, which they're going to do, that sort of gives Biden an excuse. See, the left hates me too. I'm a moderate too. I'm a moderate. The left hates me. I'm not a radical. And so it benefits them from some degree in that way as well. It intimidates voters and intimidates people from coming to the polls. You know, there's a whole bunch of advantages. But if Trump wins despite this all, people better get prepared for a very turbulent time after the election. I don't say this to discourage people from voting. I say this so people can be prepared. They get their medicine, they get their food, they get their generators, because it's going to get worse before it gets better. You know, the left are so close to taking us down, they're not going to give up now.
Trevor, we don't have a lot of time to respond to this question, but quickly, one of the things that I'm particularly troubled by is the reported desire of the Biden administration to sanction an Israeli brigade on charges that it abused human rights in Judea and Samaria, notably. A prime mover behind this is a group that I'd not heard of before. Its acronym is DAWN. And I have only had a chance to very superficially look into it, but I was struck that the guy who is the chairman of the board of this pro-Hamas, anti-Israel, anti-American, I think, operation, is none other than this fellow Niyad Awad you mentioned, the founder of CARE and a prime Muslim Brotherhood operative in the United States. Would this surprise you that they're running that kind of influence?
No. Well, this is my whole thesis, that radical groups are using the Democratic Party specifically, but even the GOP sometimes, to promote their policies. So this is law. This is lawfare. The goal is to split America from Israel.
And ultimately, and so, take down both if they can. Trevor, we're hard out of time. I can't believe how it has flown by. I hope all of you have found this fascinating, that you will look out for Trevor Loudon's fine work. And Trevor, give us a website quickly.
Yeah, trevorloudon.com. That's where all my books and videos, and you can get signed books there.
There we go.
So trevorloudon.com.
God bless you, my friend. Come back to us again soon if you would. We'll be right back with more, everybody. Stay tuned. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. In July 2020, candidate Joe Biden promised Sharia supremacists that in exchange for their votes, he would appoint Muslims to staff his administration. Moderate Muslim Zudi Jasser warned shortly after the start of the Biden presidency that it was, quote, a Trojan horse that concealed the extent to which the red-green alliance of the far-left progressives and Islamists are being given the reins, unquote. The result has been nothing short of disastrous for our country, its Mideast allies, especially Israel, and vital interests abroad and increasingly at home. Look no further than Columbia University. The Biden Islamist latest success is a new State Department report on human rights practices. It treats Israel as a worse human rights abuser than China, Russia, Iran, and the Taliban. This monstrous lie is yet another gift to jihadists who seek not only death to Israel, but death to America. This is Frank Affney. Welcome back. And I'm always very excited to have a chance to chat with my friend and colleague and partner in many enterprises. Reggie Littlejohn is her name. She is the founder and president of a really important organization, Women's Rights Without Frontiers. But she's also been an incredibly important catalyst for several other activities in which we are both engaged. Notably, she's been a founding member of our Committee on the Present Danger China. She has helped launch a Stop Vaccine Passports Task Force with the CPDC. Also has been a catalyst for the Sovereignty Coalition, which is a partnership that we've been working on to help address the impending danger of something called the Pandemic Agreement and another treaty that is amending the international health regulations of the World Health Organization. And we get things done, and we're going to talk with you about some of the stuff we've been doing on the WHO front in particular. Reggie, welcome back to Securing America. It's great to have you with us.
Oh, thank you for having me back, Frank. It's wonderful to be here.
Thanks. Let's talk just a little bit, because while we regularly address this topic, I think it's important that everyone listening have a proper understanding of really what's afoot here. What is the Biden administration intent on doing in now 32 days? And what are the implications of it, briefly?
Well, this has to do with the World Health Organization, and basically, in my opinion, the way that the globalist cabal, including the Chinese Communist Party, and along with the Biden administration, are trying to install what amounts to a coup d'etat, a globalist coup, through the means of the World Health Organization. And the Biden administration, a couple years ago, initiated the process of amending the international health regulations in ways that would install, and now there's a new pandemic treaty as well. So that both of these instruments are going to be voted on May 27th, and taken together, these instruments would seriously damage and possibly destroy, in some ways, our national sovereignty and also our personal medical freedom. So in terms of our national sovereignty, what they do is they give to the World Health Organization the power to order the United States and the other 193 countries that are members of the World Health Organization to order us in terms of whether we have some kind of a public health emergency of international concern, how to handle it, what medications we can take and can't take and must take. They want to have the power to order, you know, vaccine mandates, mask mandates, lockdowns, quarantines. They want to be able to order what medications your doctor can and cannot prescribe for you. And it's not even just about health, okay? Because they want to have power over everything that could possibly affect health, including the climate and the economy. So it's just...
Reggie, let me just ask you to pause for 1 second, because I think for most folks coming to this cold, this sounds absolutely out of the question. I mean, it's not even imaginable unless you remember what happened to us just a couple of years ago now, in the course of the pandemic known as COVID-19. Talk about the role that the director general of this World Health Organization played in the course of that crisis.
Right. So we saw things happen in the course of COVID-19 and in the aftermath that we never thought we would ever see. So the director general, Tedros Ghebreyesus, was basically served as the mouthpiece for the Chinese Communist Party, repeating their lies, like that there's no human-to-human transmission, that China has it under control, and that we would be racist to restrict flights to and from China. Meanwhile, they were restricting their own internal flights, saying that the vaccine was safe and effective and all the rest of it. And then ordering the Chinese style response, which was vaccine mandates, mask mandates, quarantines, lockdowns.
All the things that you're warning might happen to us next time. But the thing about that, Reggie, that I think is so important to understand is we did all of that at the behest of Tedros Ghebreyesus when he just had advisory authority. What you're talking about now with these treaties is he'll be able to dictate to us what we must do. Is that right? And how could that possibly happen?
If these agreements pass at the end of May, they would make Tedros Ghebreyesus the most powerful dictator ever to have walked the earth.
Wow.
I mean, he would have powers that just name your dictator, you know, Mao, Stalin, Hitler could only dream of, because they didn't have the technology to enforce it. And now he has the technology to enforce it. And so this makes him the most powerful dictator in the world ever.
And is he accountable? Was he elected to this job? Is there any way that if he gets it wrong, we will have some kind of recourse?
That's a huge problem, Frank. And it's a problem with Tedros. It's a problem with the World Health Organization, the United Nations, certainly the World Economic Forum. All of these globalist organizations are unelected, unaccountable, and there is really no court that's over them. There's no one to hold them accountable.
So if you didn't like what happened to us in the pandemic, you're probably not going to fancy what they have in mind for us under this arrangement. And you know, Reggie, again, to just go back to this baseline, how could this possibly happen to us? I'm fond of impressing upon people that the proponents of all of this, and you mentioned a number of them, starting with the Chinese Communist Party properly, I think, they keep talking about what they're doing here as instituting global governance. And that's not the same thing as the government of the United States under our Constitution, with its limitations and its accountability and representation. All of this would be over the side, which is what is so stunning about this. And here we are 32 days away from it happening, and most Americans still don't know much, if anything, about it. Reggie, we have to take a very short break. When we come back, I want to talk about what we're doing about it at the Sovereignty Coalition, the press conference we had with your considerable help last week, and what the campaign that we're now launching entails and how people can become involved in helping us mount it. Stay tuned for all of that with Reggie Littlejohn of Women's Rights Without Frontiers, co-founder of the Sovereignty Coalition. Be right back. We're back. Reggie Littlejohn is in the house virtually, I'm pleased to say. She is, among other things, a freedom fighter with a great track record in trying to help stand up for the people of China, particularly, and the oppression of the Chinese Communist Party, notably with respect to their truly horrific birth control policies, the one-child policy, and so on. But Reggie's also fighting for our freedoms as well in connection with this plan, a little over a month from now, to essentially impose, without any public knowledge, let alone debate, to say nothing of assent, a new governing arrangement on our country, essentially with, as a dictator, Tedros Ghebreyesus, the guy who I believe is more or less directly, certainly indirectly, responsible for the needless death, according to Drs. Malone and McCullough, of over 1 million Americans because the China model was not an appropriate response to that pandemic. Reggie, I want you to talk a little bit about, in the face of all of this, what our sovereignty coalition is trying to do, both to raise awareness about what's going on here and mount opposition to it, notably with a press conference last Thursday.
Well, one of the things we're doing to raise awareness, Frank, as you know, is that we're having biweekly, every Monday night, every Wednesday night, we're having either a webinar or an X Space and having a major guest on these. So we had Peter McCullough on this week. We're going to have Matt Staver on next week and to discuss all of these different issues. So those are ways of getting the word out. But then we had this major press conference last week with a number of congressional representatives. So there's Ralph Norman, Chris Smith, Andy Biggs, Bob Good, and Senator Ron Johnson, let's not forget him. And then from the Sovereign Coalition, we had Matt Schlapp, Jenny Beth Martin, Tony Perkins, Chris Allman, and yourself and me. And the thrust of this was that we are in basically what we would call a national emergency that people are just completely unaware of, that we are about to lose the freedoms that people that our founding fathers envisioned and worked so hard for to become the freest and most prosperous nation in the history of the world, and also our personal medical freedom if they go through,
Reggie, one of the reasons why I was so anxious to talk with you is that there have been in recent days releases of versions, drafts, if you will, of both of these accords, these treaties. And you've taken a hard look at it. Some people with whom we're generally aligned on opposition to these guys, these treaties and the people bringing them to us, are now saying, well, they've taken care of the problem. These things have been fixed. Your response to that, again, I need to make sure we're leaving time at the end here for a conversation about what people can do to join us in fighting all this.
What they have done, Frank, they have not solved any of the problems. It's still going to set up a surveillance state that is going to censor misinformation and disinformation. The World Health Organization is still rolling forward with these digital IDs. And so the digital gulag is bearing down upon us. And of course, the agreements have nothing to do with the central bank digital currencies, which are also being rolled out worldwide. And between the two of those are a trap that could catch us in them, and there will be no escape, because if you dissent, they can just shut you off from your credit cards and your bank accounts. But what the newest drafts of the agreements have done is basically toned down a lot of the worst language that they had in the previous drafts. I think a lot of the reason is because of people like us and people like your listeners who have objected to them so strongly. But the problems remain. They have not solved any of the problems. And by the way, the fact that they just released drafts last week is in violation of Article 55 of the International Health Regulations, which says that the final versions have to be released 4 months in advance. So that's why we have this Not Now campaign, that basically it's illegal to vote on these instruments now. The vote has to be delayed, but it's going to be very hard to get it delayed because, in my opinion, these people at the World Health Organization are lawless, and they'll vote on it anyway, even though they're breaking their own rules, unless we raise enough of an outcry.
Okay, so I couldn't agree with you more about this, Reggie, and this is what's so alarming about all of this. It's not an accident, folks, that you don't know much about this, unless you're listening to our programs and a few others, Steve Bannon's and so on. But Reggie, talk about what we're trying to do with this not now emergency campaign to defend America's sovereignty and how people can become involved in it.
What we're trying to do is raise the alarm nationally of people, like inform people, like the viewers, that this threat is imminent upon us, and ask you to please sign the campaign, put your name on it, and when you do, you can check a box, and then your letter, your email will go directly to your senators and your congressional representative and a number of people in the Biden administration, so that they can see,
including the president, I believe.
Yeah, so that they can see that people know about this and they adamantly don't want it. So,
and what we particularly don't want is really twofold. One, this hasty vote to fundamentally transform, as Barack Obama would say, our system of government, our freedoms, our constitution. And we want, before any of these accords or their particulars are imposed upon us, to ensure that the United States Senate does what it's supposed to do with these kinds of treaties, which is to say, do quality control and have a proper debate and then vote on them. And that's, you know, a twofold and I think eminently reasonable ask. And if you go to sovereigntycoalition.org, right there on the front page, there's a link as to taking action on the Not Now campaign. Please sign up, as Reggie has said, and join us and lend your voice to the opposition, and also hold accountable those in elective office who you need to know where they stand on this. This ought to be, it seems to me, a voting issue. Reggie, we have to let you go for the moment, but we will have you back soon with updates on all of this. Thank you for your leadership in this and in so many other areas. Thank you for being such a great partner, and Godspeed, my dear, on sovereigntycoalition.org and, of course, Women's Rights Without Frontiers. Matt Staver is actually tonight. Look for Twitter Spaces. Kat Lindley's one of our hosts. Check it out. Next time, folks, until then, go forth and multiply.